Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Deva uchu.
Deva uchu.
Naivam
vidhamo
bhagavan
prana
rodham characharasya kila sattvam dhamna videhi tan no vrijinad Vimoksham Raktam Vayam Tvam Sharanam Sharanyam Deva Uchu Naivam Vidhamo Bhagavan Pranarutam Characharasya Jirasatpradhamna Videhi tanno vijrinad vimoksham Prattha vayam svam sharanam sharanyam Deva uchu
of the
katse
Na
Evam
thus
Vidhama
we can understand
Bhagavan
O
Personality of Godhead
Pranarodham
how we feel our breathing choked Chara moving Acharasya, not moving. Akila, universal. Sattva, existence. Dhamna, the reservoir of. Videhi, trying to do the needful. Tat, therefore. Na, our. Vrijinat, from the danger. Vimoksham,
liberation.
Rapta,
approaching.
Vayam,
all of
us. Tvam, unto you. Sharanam,
shelter.
Sharanyam,
worthy
to be taken shelter of. Translation. The demigod said, Dear Lord, you are the refuge of all moving and non-moving living entities. We feel all living entities to be suffocating, the breathing process choked up. We have never experienced such a thing. Since you are the ultimate shelter of all surrendered souls, we have therefore approached you, kindly save us from this danger. Purport. Dhruva Maharaja's influence attained by executing devotional service unto the Lord was felt even by the demigods, who had never before experienced such a situation. Because of Dhruva Maharaja's controlling his breathing, the entire universal breathing process was choked. It is by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that material entities cannot breathe, whereas spiritual entities are able to breathe. Material entities are products of the Lord's external energy, whereas spiritual entities are products of the Lord's internal energy. The demigods approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the controller of both kinds of entities, in order to know why the breathing was choked. The Supreme Lord is the ultimate goal for the solution of all problems within this material world. In the spiritual world, there are no problems, but the material world is always problematic. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of both the material and spiritual worlds, It is better to approach Him in all problematic situations. Those who are devotees, therefore, have no problems in this material world. Vishvam Purna Shukaya Te Chaitanya Chandamita. Devotees are free from all problems because they are fully surrendered under the Supreme Personality Godhead. For a devotee, everything in the world is very pleasing because he knows how to use everything in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So we see the influence of the devotees here. This is an important aspect. Many times we tend to think of the influence of devotees on the material platform. That, you know, what they can do materially, then they get some result. But actually we see it's different. Because when the devotee is in tune with the Lord, then the Lord is reciprocating. He is influencing all living entities. The Lord is within everyone's heart. So therefore, then he has, the devotee therefore has influence on everyone. So we see here, because of Bhruva Maharaj, his platform of full concentration, his platform of pure devotion, then this pure devotion then had an influence on everyone. So here the demigods, having never experienced this, because this is in the very beginning of creation. So then they are wondering, what is this? Because they have never seen such influence before. They themselves, though they are the controllers of the universe, they do not have such influence. When they breathe, others don't, you know, breathe. When they stop breathing, others don't know. Though they are controlling the universe, they do not have such control. But Guru Maharaj, because of his devotion to the Lord, then he has such control. So actually we see is that things are actually functioning because of the spiritual platform. Many times we think it's material energy that makes things work. No, material energy works in her way, but under the control of the Supreme Lord. So we see that the demigods are not used to this. They're devotees, but they're not pure devotees. We see that they have come to the Lord. It says, you are the ultimate refuge, ultimate shelter of all surrendered souls. So that is both a glorification that the Lord is the ultimate shelter, but at the same time, as they're pointing out that there are other shelters. Right? It means that Indra is a shelter, and Varuna is a shelter, and Agni is a shelter. They're all shelters. So there's so many shelters. You know, the head of the family shelters the family, or the king is sheltering the country, like this. So many shelters are there. Krishna is the ultimate shelter. So they, as demigods, are feeling that they are also shelters of all the living entities in the universe. So now they are finding that they themselves cannot give that shelter that is required. So they're having to turn to the supreme shelter, which is Krishna. So then we see that Srila Prabhupada points out that the living entities, that they can be, that the material living entities may not be able to breathe, but the spiritual entities can breathe. So then this makes an interesting point, because after making this, then he points out that the demigods could not breathe. So that means that they are on the material platform. The Prakriti Bhakta means he is on the material platform, he is influenced by the material energy, because of his own desire, because of his own need. He wants to be controlled by the material energy, because he has things to gain from the material energy. So therefore, for things to actually function, you must be controlled by it. It's actually the living entity thinks they're in control. But that's not actually what's happening. The living entity desires. And then when their desire is sanctioned, the material energy fulfills that desire. It makes the arrangements and makes everything happen. All the external arrangements happen. All the influences on your mind and intelligence, they happen. So actually, for the living entity to enjoy the material energy, he must be controlled by the material energy. That is the point. Though we're under the idea that no, I'm in control. But actually, if you want to enjoy it, you must be controlled by it. So this is the interesting contradiction that is here. The material world needs contradiction. Because here, nothing is correct. It's problematic. Problematic means if you have something that's natural, it's not problematic. Right? If you have a fish in water, it's not problematic. If you have a fish out of water, it's a problem. Like this. So the spiritual world is not problematic because the living entity who is spiritual is then in the situation of the transcendental or spiritual realm. But the material world is problematic because the living entity doesn't belong here. Right? Material energy has no problem. Right? A rock is not complaining, you know, if it is sitting out in the rain or it's too hot or it gets crushed into powder. It never complains. It doesn't have any problem. Right? The living entities, they're the ones with the problem because they don't belong here. Therefore, it's problematic. Well, in the spiritual world, there are no problems. Vaikuntha, there's no problems. Because that's where the living entity belongs. So because the living entity wants to enjoy this material nature, that creates a problem. Just being here is a problem. Then trying to enjoy the material nature is a problem because it's not enjoyable. Then you have to be controlled by the material nature to enjoy it. You know, or get that sense of enjoyment. So we see we just compound problem on top of problem. It's a very difficult situation. So the demigods here, we see that they're coming to the Lord. And what is their prayer? Save us from this danger. It's not, please, you know, make us your pure devotees, or please help, you know, bless us to give up this material conception, or anything like this. No, it is simply we can't breathe, so we want to breathe. Why do we want to breathe? So we can go on enjoying this material energy. Right? If we can't breathe, it's a distraction. It's a problem. Right? Because breathing is necessary. Because prana, without prana, the senses don't work. So senses aren't going to work if there's no breathing. Right? That's why Guru Maharaj stopped his breathing and stopped the senses. Because he wanted to focus only on the Supreme Lord. So there's no need of the material senses. And so therefore there's no need of the material breathing. So he gave that up. So the demigods, though they're having this difficulty, is that now they are not able to enjoy as they have been. Right? So they are wondering what is going on. So they have not seen such an influence in this universe. So they are not understanding. It's the Supreme Lord who is, he is pervading everything. We breathe because he is breathing. So then here, then the devotee, because of his influence, then he is able to, become so much in tune with the Lord that his weight becomes as heavy as the Lord. When he stops breathing, then the whole universe stops breathing. So these elements are there. We see that the devotee has that influence. And his influence is not because he's expert in dealing with the material energy. His expertise is expertise in dealing with Krishna. Like that. So therefore, that is the perfection. If it's done nicely for Krishna, it is perfection. And we see that everybody acknowledges. Those who are uncultured, they may make fun or joke, but others don't. Right? We see that when Srila Prabhupada would sing, he would sing a song, and everybody would appreciate. And if we notice, in the very early days, Prabhupada always sang the same song and the same tune. It was not a different tune. There was the Hare Krishna tune. It was always the same. And he would sing that for hours. But no one noticed it's the same tune, it's such a simple tune. No one said anything. It was a material consideration. The materialist sings, it would be. But the devotee sings, it's not. So the influence is very different than the materialist. Materialist, because it is so-called expertise, then material energy is moving. But factually, even that, it's not moving. It's only been sanctioned. Material energy, she's the one who's expert in moving material energy. Where no one in the material world is actually expert. You simply have an idea of how to deal with it that is closer in line or is in line with how the Lord wants it arranged. And then, depending upon the Lord's desire, it will be arranged or not. That is the thing. So for the living entity, then, you know, this becomes a problem because they want to control and enjoy. Immediately, when this is brought up, the question comes, well, where is my free will? As if it is something so important. Right? My freedom is the most important thing. But the point is, you know, what is your freedom when you jump into a pool with a rock around your neck and no breathing apparatus? Right? You have two choices, hold your breath or breathe in water. Right? Great choice, isn't it? You know? So we come to the material world where there is no freedom. The living entity has no power in this material world. Right? 1/10,000th the tip of the hair isn't even going to be able to move a particle of dust, because a particle of dust is generally about the size of the tip of a hair, if not a little bit bigger. So that means the particle of dust is about 10,000 times or more bigger than us. Right? And so we're the great movers, the great freedom lovers, performers of Herculean tasks, like wanting to move a grain of dust. So it's not a proper beginning to start with. So the factual point is material energy is moved by material energy. She is the one who moves. We don't do anything. And she gets her power to move things from the Lord. So therefore, only He is able to move everything. But then when we come in tune with the Lord, then we see what amazing things can be done. The demigods are following the pious rules given by the Lord, and they can do so much. Because material nature has a nature, and they deal with it according to that nature, as given by Krishna. But the mundane aspect. So they're pious, they're the most pious, and they do very pious, wonderful activities. But we see Guru Maharaj has come in tune with the Lord, that if he is dealing with the material energy, how the Lord wants it done on the transcendental platform. Therefore, his influence is so much greater, infinitely greater. So this they have never experienced. They have experienced the power of pious activities. But now they are experiencing something unknown, the power of devotional service. So this, even the demigods find bewildering, because it goes beyond what anyone can do. Srila Prabhupada used to sometimes would laugh when they would be having these big festivals and kirtans. And he would laugh because he would mention that Narad Muni and other sages would come to watch all these malechas and yavanas dancing ecstatically in the kirtan. Right? Even they were finding quite an amazing thing. So this is the influence. So the demigods, they're not noticing this at this point. They are simply finding it's a danger for them. The material progress is problematic. So therefore, they're going to the Lord to solve this. That makes them devotees, but not advanced devotees. Well, Dhruva Maharaj, he is the advanced devotee because he has brought everything in line with the Lord. Any questions or comments?
Thanks. Does anyone have to ask in the category of karma nishra bhaktas? My question is, what is the difference between karma yogi and a karma nishra bhakta? What is the difference in the journalism?
Basically, it's what is the difference between a car and an automobile? And there is no difference. Bhakta means yogi. See, there's a karmi, someone who is performing karmic activities. That's different. Because they are not connecting it to the Lord. But the karma yogi means he is connecting yoga with the Lord, but he's doing it through the activities of karma. See, there's a delicate balance that is going on. Generally, the tendency is to want to deal with things in a gross way, because gross is very obvious and simple. Well, subtle is more difficult. And it may be materially seemingly more restrictive. Is that you have to do two things. You have to inspire and enliven someone with no qualifications to take up the greatest task. Right? Is to go from being materially conditioned to developing pure love for God. This is what is trying to be achieved. So now you must balance between this beginner or neophyte in Krishna consciousness being overwhelmed by the prospect of the greatness of the task that is there, and therefore losing enthusiasm on one hand, and due to their not being so qualified that they have, you know, made one step and they think now they have become the greatest of great devotees. And so to put that into balance. So this is the reason that the point is made that you have to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Because otherwise, it's impossible to advance in the devotional path without that. Completely impossible. Like that. No, all this stuff, well, you know, I was a very, you know, intellectual and pious person, and yes, I came to Krishna consciousness because my self-searching soul, this, that, and, you know, very qualified. No. Prabhupada said he made our fortune because he was on the planet, therefore there was an interest in spiritual consciousness. Because there's devotees on the planet chanting and trying to serve Krishna, therefore the good fortune of people are being made. No other reason. People in this age are not qualified. Right? Just the natural piety is not there within them. Some have it to a little more degree, and some to a lot less degree. So the difficulty that comes is that how to balance this. That is why the acharyas are so important, because they tell us this. So we understand that anything less than pure unalloyed devotional service is not important. But if we understand that, anything less than that is not devotional service. Right? It's called bhava sadhana or sadhana bhakti. It doesn't say bhakti. Bhakti starts at prema. That's it. Anything below that is substandard. That's all. It's that simple. But how are you going to encourage somebody to get from zero up to prema bhakti? Because whatever is in connection with bhakti, it becomes bhakti. Whatever is in connection with Krishna becomes Krishnized. Right? Prabhupada uses this term, Krishnized. Right? So it touches Krishna, therefore it becomes empowered with the internal potency. But so the difficulty is the neophyte devotee, or so many, but especially the neophyte, when he becomes empowered, he thinks he is that. He's been empowered to lead the kirtan or give a class. He gives a nice class, leads a good kirtan, cooks nicely, does something wonderful. I did that. I am a great kirtanier. I am a great lecturer. I am a great preacher. I am a great all this. We're great nothings. The potency was there, right? You have an electronic gadget. You can do anything without electricity? No. It'll just sit there. So if you put in the battery, it functions. So this is the problem. Because of ego, that's prakriti. Because we identify so much with the outside and think, yes, I'm picking up this book. No, the hands are picking up this book. It's not me. It's made out of material energy. It's not me. Right? Hands are being pushed by the muscles, being pushed by the airs. Right? And that is happening because it's being pushed by the mind. And how is it being allowed? Because Krishna sanctioned it. The material energy is pushing it. So Maya picked up this book. But because it happened when I thought, I want to pick up this book, therefore then we think, I did it. Right? So the problem is we identify with it. So there's this difficult balance that is there. So when we hear these terms, karma, like we hear karma, Mr. Bhakti, that is seen in a good light or a bad light? If I say to you, yes, he's performing karma, Mr. Bhakti, you will say that's good or you will say that's not so good? Which will you say? Huh? Depends how you're looking at it, but how is it generally used?
Good.
Okay, then we're doing okay. Generally it's used not so good. Generally it's meant to be, it's not pure. Mistra means mixed. Right? It's not pure. So therefore when we are dealing with the same subject, when we say karma yoga, generally that means good. We're trying to point out the good qualities of it. That the activity of the neophyte is connected to the Lord. Therefore, it is yoga, karma yoga. But when we're talking about the devotional activity, that it's not pure. You know, there's some material motive, we call it karma nishtha. It's exactly the same thing. But it's just depending on what connotation you want to put on it. Right? This is the science. So karma yoga, then it's inspiring. Yes, I'm doing yoga even though I'm sweeping the floor. Karma Mr. Bhakti is then puts one in one's place. You know, I'm the big pure devotee because see how nicely I'm sweeping this floor. Yeah, but you want a result, you want people to notice you're sweeping the floor, therefore it's karma Mr. Right? The karma yoga means that the activity of karma, activity of moving your arm, your material arm with a material broom across the material floor, that you're doing it for Krishna, that is karma being connected to Krishna, karma yoga. So therefore, then it becomes glorious. Right? And if your motive is to please Krishna, it becomes wonderful. Karma Mistra generally points out the mentality that in their mind, though they're performing a devotional activity that's connected to Krishna, they want some material fruit from that. Therefore, even within the neophyte platform, you can have a pure devotee. You can have a third-class pure devotee. Because they don't have at least a conscious material goal. They're sweeping the floor because they want to please Krishna. That's all. But they themselves don't have much knowledge, aren't very developed or advanced, or very situated. So they're called a third-class pure devotee. But when they're doing it and they expect recognition or expect something from that, you know, because of this, then, you know, we're going to you and offering you prayers, Lord, so therefore you're going to make us breathe nicely so we can go back to frolicking in Nandankana with our girls and on our chariots and wear our armor and, you know, all these things, then that's kind of this one. Right? So it's a delicate point. Like that. So what that means is the connection with the Lord in bhakti, that means prema. Connection with the Lord in understanding and knowledge, that's jnana nistha. Connecting to the Lord by activities, that's karma nistha. Right? So we see that those on the transcendental platform, then they are performing activities, but it's not called karma yoga. It's called bhakti yoga. Because they're connecting to Krishna as bhakti, and it's a secondary thing they're performing the activity. It's not a sadhana. So it's a very delicate point, this. Is if you emphasize one too much one way or the other, you'll create a problem. One is, if it's too much one way, you'll get impersonalism. Too much the other way, you'll get sahaja. Like that. Or people will get, you know, the sahajiyas are over-inspired, and the impersonalists are under-inspired. Like that. Does that make some sense? So you'll come across this in the whole process. And therefore you'll see the same thing we'll talk about with glorify, the same thing we'll talk about that it's not proper. So whenever you see these so-called contradictions, it's because it is a point that can be used both ways. Right? Right? You never see chanting Hare Krishna spoken about in a bad way. Right? Or worship of the deity. Right? Except if they're worshipping for a material fruit. But the worship itself is never spoken of badly. Right? Hearing Bhagavatam is never spoken of badly. Associating with devotees, the principle, is never spoken of badly. There's something like varnashram, pious activities. It's both spoken about in a glorious way and badly. Why? Because it's a material activity. It's the best of material activities. It's the sattvic of material activities. It's the most enlightening and uplifting of all material activities. But if it's not done for Krishna, what's the use? You know? Prabhupada pointed out that pigeons are also vegetarian. Very nice, pious birds. So it's not enough. That's the Bhagavatam opens on this premise. That varnashram is not enough. It has to be performed, because otherwise what else if you want to offer the best to Krishna? Right? We're going to dovetail things in Krishna, the best in varnashram. So therefore that's what we'll use here. Right? Because we only have this body, this material, things around this material, so we engage it in Krishna's service. So that's the best. And according to how Krishna likes it, favorable, how Krishna wants it, not how Krishna doesn't want it. Right? So then it becomes naishkarma. But naishkarma or nishkam karma yoga still is karma yoga. It's engaging karma in the service of the Lord. But because it's for Krishna's pleasure, it's called nishkam. It's for our pleasure, it's called sakam. So therefore, both of them are karma nistra and both of them are karma yoga. But at the same time, we generally would have a tendency to say nishkam as karma yoga and sakam as karma nistra. Though they both can be used both ways. Does that make some sense? So the whole idea is we should understand the mood of the acharya. See, Prabhupada said, read the books and then study the books. Reading means you go through because there is a chronological way things are put. Same time, study to see why this thing, why that. Why here Prabhupada is saying, in the first sentence, Prabhupada is saying, human life begins with varnashram. You know, that one must perform these activities. Any, you know, proper human being does this. And then the rest of the paragraph he's saying it's not enough. Right? So what is the conclusion? People neither follow varnashram nor engage their nature in Krishna's service. Right? So the point has been totally missed. Well, Prabhupada says here, Varnashram is, you know, not enough. Lord Chaitanya said, Varnashram is external. Right? That's why he, you know, would sleep on the floor and wouldn't let women come within 50 feet of him and only eat at Brahmins' houses and only dressed as a sannyasi and, you know, only got up in Brahmin Kurta and, you know, only did all these Varnashram things because it's external, right? Right? Devotees would say, I've heard it so many times, oh, you say Varnashram, external. Rejected. Right? But it's rejected as the ultimate goal, but not as part of the process. Right? Like you use knives, and like now, back there, we're using those knives, and we're using little cutting boards and a plastic, and, you know, these stainless steel pots and that. But is that the goal? Right? When prasad is served, you're going to see that plastic thing and all the knives and all that. It's going to be all rolled up nicely, and then it's going to be put right on your plate. Isn't it? No. You're not going to see those knives, those cutting boards, that plastic, those drums. You're not going to see them. In fact, you won't even see the fire. You won't even see the pot that it was cooked in. You're going to see what's cooked afterwards in a bucket and with a spoon, completely separate from this. But now, could we have gotten that cooked preparation without all those pots and cutting boards and everything there? No. That's the point. Because that's external to the cooking process. Cooking starts when the sabji goes in the pot and there's a fire underneath. That you call cooking. This you don't call cooking. You call this cutting up. But without this, no cooking happens. Unless you want them to put those subjects as they are right in the pot. You can do that. You know? I mean, if you like, we can speak. I'm sure the temple commander would find life a lot easier. He wouldn't have to worry about this. He can just dump the subjects straight into the pots. In fact, he just put the pots out in the back, and when the person with the vegetables comes from the market, he just dump them in the pots. Right? We don't have to worry about it. And then the cook will just turn on the fire and, if, you know, prasad is served. No, but it's part of the process. But it's not the goal. See, for the karmi, the karma is the goal. Therefore, he's called the karmi. You perform a pious activity, it gives you a pious result. That result is his goal. Therefore, he's called the karmi. Right? You give up those pious results. And that frees you from the material world. It gives you liberation. That's called jnana. Right? But the devotee performs activity, but he doesn't want the result, the pious result of that activity. Nor is he looking for the purification by giving up the results of that activity, the liberation. He is simply trying to render service to Krishna. Right? The residents of the spiritual world, the spiritual bodies, with spiritual objects, render spiritual service to Krishna in love. So neither do we have a spiritual body, neither is the objects we have spiritual, and neither is our love on the pure transcendental background. We speak for ourselves, but just for examples we're giving in a generalization. Right? So how are we going to serve Krishna? Impossible. Absolutely impossible. Krishna, he reciprocates as you surrender. Right? So, what is the uniqueness of Braja Krishna? Pure, unalloyed love. Do we have that? No. So therefore, we'll see Braja Krishna? No. Not a chance in hell. Unless he wants to come to see you. There's nothing you can do that will bring him. Unless it's pure, unalloyed devotion. Right? But, because whatever you're doing is in pursuance of that goal, then Krishna and his eternal servants and those in line understand the mood of the acharyas, understand that also to be basically as good as. You know, the principle of iron and fire. So it's as good as fire. Therefore, Krishna reciprocates. Then the whole process works. But what else are we going to have? We only have material body and material floor and material everything. So Krishna is so kind that his internal potency then empowers that. So therefore, it something pleasing is there for Krishna. That's why it must be done with devotion. Just moving the arm on the floor, it's nice. But if you do it to please Krishna, then it becomes more imbued with that devotion. It becomes more pleasurable to Krishna. So we're just making the best of a bad moment. What we have, we're using. What else do you have? There isn't another option. Therefore, all these different things that regulate the body and create, these are necessary. But they're not the goal. Therefore, niyamagraha is pushed so much. Is that some, the smarta or the neophyte has a tendency is the rule itself is what is actually getting the result. No, the rule will get you a pious result. But you want a devotional result. Therefore, it's more than the rule, it's the devotion that gets the result we want. And then there's the other side, is either not understanding the rules, or we say, oh, it's the devotion, therefore, what do we need the rule for? Throw it all out. Just from our hearts, things will just permeate and expand. Right? But we don't see it happening. For a moment, yes. Oh, we don't need all this. We just think of the Lord in our hearts. And how long do they do that? 30 seconds, then back to business. Right? That's all. But here, Guru Maharaj, 24 hours a day. That's pure unalloyed devotional service. 24 hours a day. Not 3 seconds. Does that make some sense? Some other point? Or? Yes.
Maharaj, even the life of Guru Maharaj. So many good instructions, like how we are supposed to love words of spiritual master and all the opulences. But at the same time, in the life of Guru Maharaj, there's also a possibility that sometimes we could think that by performing austerities like Guru Maharaj, we can achieve Lord very easily. There is no need for us to associate with devotees. So if we do service to the deities, or if we do service to encouragement that deities all chant around very nicely, you know, do all this austerity, have a mangalarti every day very nicely. There's no need for us to really associate with God, it's not so important because Guru Maharaj achieved love of God without really going through the process of initiation of devotees. Then there is a possibility that you could misinterpret such a connotation from the scriptures. How does one understand it?
See, there's two kinds of association. There's Bapu and Vani. Of those two, the Vani is the most important. Bapu is because in Bapu you might get Vani. That's why Bapu is there. In that situation, you might hear something. So, Dhruva Maharaj is very much associating with the devotees because he's strictly following the directions given by his mother and Narad Muni. So the directions of his spiritual masters he is following. And he's firmly focused upon the Supreme Lord. So these austerities he's performing are so he can remember the Lord. They themselves, they can't get more than liberation. We must always remember that. Is that the austerity or the activity that is done in this world, the activity itself, if it is done without knowledge, it can get you a pious result at best. If it's done with knowledge, it can get you liberation at best. So bhakti is not gotten by any of these. bhakti is gotten because you've done it for Krishna. One could then say, therefore, I won't do it, I'll just do bhakti to Krishna. But what do you do bhakti to Krishna with? Right? On my mind. The mind is material. Right? The intelligence, the senses are also material. The body is material. Ego is material. So therefore, we can't get around that we're going to have to do some activity. You know, this is the closest you can get to that did nothing. But people nowadays in Kali Yuga, this was the Yuga Dharma, was meditation. In this age, meditation is not. It's part of the process. It's not the process. Hearing and chanting is the process. And then from hearing and chanting, then you get to remembrance. Then it comes 24 hours. But through hearing and chanting, you get remembered. He, through austerity, got remembered. What we see is that he did these things and then it helped him advance. Advance means is because it gives him more illumination, more knowledge, by that detachment, and by that knowledge and detachment, he becomes free from material desire. And when he becomes free from material desire, then he can remember the Lord more. So the goal is to remember the Lord. The goal is not these austerities. That's the thing, is nowadays someone wants to be religious. They feel good about being religious. So that they've done some religious activity, that itself makes them pleased. But pleasing Krishna, that's a different thing. Pleasing Krishna means is that you did it to please him, not yourself. The man gives so much in charity to the poor people. It's nice, but he does it to please himself. Why? Because then he feels I'm a very religious person. You know, all day I'm in the office and I'm cheating and lying and stealing and doing all nonsense to get as much money as I can get my hands on. So I feel good that I've given some of this away in charity as such a religious person. Right? And how often do you hear of anonymous charity? Right? Completely anonymous charity. No, you go to these dharmshala, and even the fan blade has the guy's name written on it. You know? The only anonymous thing I've seen in the dharmshala is over the door in the bathroom. It says, given by an anonymous donor. But at least it's mentioned that it was given. The person did donate for it, but his name is not listed before. Right? So they want recognition. Right? The big guy comes and gives you a packet of money, you know, and that, you know, for the deities, and they say thank you, and that's all. Then they don't feel completely gratified. Oh, hey, you know, this is, oh, I think, oh, it's an announced, yes, this, ah, this, only thing, yes, today, this day, then, then they feel, yes. So knowing the nature of the person, yes, it should be done. Because that's the ego and all that, is someone who has, so that's the proper way of dealing, right? It means varnashram means accepting and acknowledging the ego, the mind, the senses of a living entity, and dealing with it so that they are satisfied and inspired. So it's done. But it's being done because of those things. So that's not pleasing to Krishna. Krishna wasn't involved in any of this. But it's that if it's I as a person who is generating income, and so therefore it's my duty to give in charity to those who don't generate income because Krishna said it should be done. And not only that, is therefore I also give to those persons and situations which are going to forward Krishna's purpose. Then the whole process becomes connected. Then you get spiritual benefit for it. So it's a different thing. Devotional service and pious activities are two different things. But devotional service is so wonderful because we don't have another option other than pious activities. It also becomes part of the process. Like that, it's taken as good as. You have taken your material body and picked up the material item and offered it to Krishna. It's accepted as good as someone in the spiritual body picking up a spiritual item and offering it to Krishna. This is Krishna's broad-mindedness. That's the specialty of it. You know? But just to, yeah, that's the special thing. So, therefore, the austerity, penance, charity cannot get us beyond the Viraja River. It'll get you up to that, or you get you to the Brahman, but it won't get you into Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means is you have to have affection for Krishna. Then you can get in. So that's a different thing. So the charity, austerity, the sacrifice, these are used as mediums for the bhakti. Because there is no other thing to use. You understand? We don't have something else to use. Right? You want to show affection to somebody, you have to use something. You just sit in your office and meditate, and then your wife and children will be satisfied. No, you know, you give them something. You bring home something. You say something, or you perform an activity that shows. Right? Then they're satisfied. So there must be a medium for exchange. To exchange rasa, there has to be something used. Right? That's the process. So we don't have spiritual items to use. So we're using material. But because we're using them to please Krishna, Krishna accepts them as good. Because to him, there is no material and spiritual. To him, it's his energy. Right? You know, it's just like you have your living room that's all nicely done, and then you have the go-down where just everything you don't know what to do with gets stuffed in there. But it's all your house. So for Krishna, this is also his energy. Inferior. But if there's nothing else around, then what will you use? Like that. Does that make some sense? Like that. That's why one has to see this. And this is what's called the, how do you say, I think it's the Amnaya Tattva means that knowledge that comes down through the Parampara. They give this. They show you how to distinguish between matter and spirit. You know, in everything, in all our activities, in all our thoughts, so that we know how to engage in Krishna service and what's not, and then the fine points that will take. Where will it take you? You perform the same activity. It can get you to the same activity can get you to the heavenly planets, can get you to the Brahman, can get you to Vaikuntha, can get you to Dwarka, or can get you to Vrindavan. It's depending upon the mentality of which it's done. Yeah. So many people come into the temple and offer something to Krishna and put it down here, they don't want to go to the heavenly planets. But of course, because they've given it to Krishna, then they have done devotional service. So therefore, their material existence is finished. But still, the result they're wanting is that. So unless they get association and change, then that's where they'll go. They'll be one of these ones, Deva Uchu. You know, what's going on here? We can't breathe. You know. Does that make some sense? Anything else that we should have here? Or?
Hare Krishna, there is a clarification regarding Nishkam Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So, when we talk about Nishkam Karma Yoga, that means before after what the person is performing Nishkam Karma Yoga, although the process is beginning to Krishna, but he is not doing that to please Krishna. And the same activity the devotee is doing, and he is doing to please Krishna, what we call it Bhakti Yoga.
See, his Nishkam Karma Yoga can be theoretically performed by the non-devotees. In theory, it can. There's nothing barring them. Is that you are performing the activity without desire for result. You know, like you see the husband is performing his duties as the protector of the family because it's his duty, or taking care of his parents because it's his duty. But you do see that there is some underlying desire there. You know? And the impersonalists perform these same activities, but generally they don't take this as a path. It's actually the only one that works. Nishkam Karma Yoga gives knowledge, gives detachment. So it's the only process that can bring you to the Brahman platform within the material world. So this thing where they give up activities and just study Vedanta, unless they're already pure and on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, it won't work. Because it won't purify them. So that's why they don't get anywhere. We don't hear of anyone going to the Brahman. Right? We hear of Sukadeva Goswami, who is a Brahmavadi. And we hear the Four Kumaras. I mean, as far as I recollect, of actually hearing of someone who was a Brahmavadi who was actually situated in Brahman. I don't know. Do you know of any other examples of those two who are actually situated on the Brahman platform? Sukadeva is from the spiritual realm. He simply came to perform the pastime. The Four Kumaras are an avatar of the Lord. So therefore, it doesn't really give great inspiration for someone who is thinking that they'll get to the Brahman platform. Right? You get more success out of being a big nasty demon than having Krishna kill you. They get to the Brahman. You know? But that's not an ordinary thing. It becomes the biggest and nastiest of all demons. So the theoretically they can do it, but they don't. So then Nishkam Karma Yoga won't give you Krishna. Nishkam Karma Yoga will give you liberation. So when that yoga means it is connected to Krishna, the yoga means connection to Krishna, rather than yoga simply meaning an uplifting process, like the Ashtanga Yoga, Patanjali Yoga, like that. So it depends where you want to go. Nishkam Karma Yoga will connect you with Brahman, which is also Krishna. But when it's done as devotional service, then it will take you to... means the yogis also perform Nishkam Karma Yoga. Right? This Yoga Rudha and Yoga Rukshu. So I think the Yoga Rudha is the lower level. So the first Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, and Dharana, those are Nishkam Karma Yoga. But they'll get you to meditation on Paramatma. But when we do it in connection with devotional service, we're using then the yoga means bhakti. So then you have three definitions of what is yoga for Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Then you get the karmi, the jnani, and the devotee. So that will get you. So when it's done to please Krishna, that will get you to Krishna. Otherwise, it won't get you out of this material world. Really. Okay? So that's it. And here. Tantrakshima Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samadeva Bhaktivedanta ki. Jayanta Govardhanam ki.